If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
The Marx Brothers are, to my mind, not just incredibly talented fellows who lived in Chicago for a considerable amount of time, but incredibly durable, too, in that you can mention Groucho Marx as some 20-year-old on the street, and they're like, oh, yeah, I know him. I saw him in these movies and blah, 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 blah. Nobody, I would say, knows him better than my guest. Frank Ferrante has been Groucho for four decades. Frank, I'm stunned and amazed, but my colleague Chris Jones at the Chicago Tribune tells me you're something of a genius. So welcome to the show.
Well, I appreciate that, Rick, and thanks to Chris. Thank you both for that. I am grateful for those 40 years. I've had just a remarkable experience as you say, this incredible character.
Well, it is an incredible character. I mean, you think to yourself, okay, who has done this kind of thing before? And, of course, the first name that generally comes to mind is Hal Holbrook, who played God knows how many Mark Twains in his life. But the way this happened for you, I find very, very intriguing. You were a very young man, and you were approached by Groucho Marx's son, and the relationship formed. How did this whole thing start, Frank?
Well, Rick, I fell in love with the Marx Brothers when I saw one of their films, Day at the Races, when I was 9 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I was completely entranced. I was exhilarated by it. I've never seen this kind of insane behavior. And when you're nine, everything seems like it's actually happening and real. Yeah.
Yes.
And I didn't understand from comedy or filmmaking. All I know is that there was this you know, absolutely free and wild man with the black mustache and eyebrows and a cigar running around and saying brash, irreverent, inappropriate things to people around him. And I was thrilled by it. And I wanted to be like him, quite frankly. And that's really what started was like, I went into my local library, Rick, and I just started researching the Marx Brothers and comedy of that era, and that expanded into a comedy, to comedy of the era that I was living in at that time in the 70s. Mel Brooks, Woody Allen.
Well, Mel Brooks, I'm sure Mel Brooks knew Groucho Marx, but there's certainly similarities between those two freewheeling characters. Beside falling in love with Marx at 9 years old, you started to devote your life to theater as a young man. You went to college as a theater major, yes?
That's right, and that's where I put on this one-man show as Groucho Marx as a senior project. It was called An Evening with Groucho. This was 40 years ago, 1985.
Mm.
And back to your point, Arthur Marx, Groucho Marx's son, who was a playwright,
yeah,
was a writer, he came to my performance, and as did Groucho's daughter, Miriam Marx, as did Maury Riskind, who co-wrote Animal Crackers and A Night at the Opera, two of these classic Marx Brothers comedies. But I'd broken the show in as a, you know, in a church hall where I grew up in Sierra Madre, California, and as the lead up to the on campus production of An Evening with Groucho. And imagine it's my 22nd birthday, and in the audience of my subject matter of the man I'm portraying are two of his children.
Frank Ferrante, did you know they were coming to the show before you went on that night?
I did. You never know if they're going to show up, though. One was coming from an hour and a half away. Another one was coming from Bel Air. But I invited, I think, 100 people to come see the show, people that knew Groucho Marx, from Lucille Ball to Jack Lemmon to the Marx family and writers, and the three probably most important people associated with Groucho showed up. And after the show, I mean, you know, at that time the show was... It's pretty close to what it is now, but the show now is about a third of it is improvised, Rick. It's
sure.
You know, it's changed. It's evolved. But, you know, it was Groucho Marx songs from Broadway, you know, Hooray for Captain Spaulding and Lady of the Tattooed Lady. And I was doing stories, but I wasn't improvising much because I didn't know how to improvise.
Exactly. Yeah, you're 22 years old, of course.
And you don't have much experience.
Who are you going to improvise for? You know, the mirror in your bedroom? You need an audience for that kind of thing.
That's
What was it as you, I'm very curious, Frank Ferrante, as you started to do your own kind of independent research before performing anywhere, it had to lead you to the Marx Brothers slightly beyond their films or deeper than their films, to sort of grasp this this sort of entertainment, intellectual entertainment phenomenon that were the Marx Brothers. They always have transfixed me too. How deep did you read? There were biographies, of course, but what else did you read?
Well, it was not just the reading. I was in the libraries before, the internet, and I was getting the guides, getting magazine articles and newspaper articles. But really, it was my friendship with Miriam, his daughter, and Arthur, his son, that really provided the most insight in terms of his complexity and the impact he had on his family and those around him, for better and worse, mostly better. So I had intimate conversations, and they were family to me. Arthur was family to me. Arthur ended up to get back to the USC production. After that show, it was such a hit. He said, "Franco, if I ever do a show about my father, I'd like to use you." And within a year, I was in New York off Broadway.
Yeah.
And after that closed, I was on the West End.
In London, yeah.
Groucho in London. So this is, I'm 23, 24, but to get back to your question, Groucho was a complex, they came from poverty.
Of course.
Groucho never made it past the sixth grade. Groucho was self-educated. Arthur Marx, his son, told me he kept a dictionary in his glove compartment because he was always referencing, the dictionary for new words and definitions, and was a voracious reader. He subscribed to multiple newspapers. He was interested in world affairs and politics and gardening and sports and baseball, and he was a complicated guy. And he came from nothing, and he wrote half a dozen books, and of course had this 70 plus year career. And to your point, he hasn't gone away, and he keeps being rediscovered by new generations. And I think a lot of it has to do with, I don't know, how do you describe the genius of a great artist?
Well, I don't either. You have to either deal with it viscerally, or you have to do an astonishing amount of research to make it work. And I think one of the reasons, and I'm not in position to say this, one of the reasons you, Frank Ferrante, have been so durable and entertaining for 40 years is you are introducing people not just to the guy who they saw in a movie, because I think a lot of people, that's their level of understanding of Groucho Marx, is, oh, the guy in the movie, or the guy who they once dressed up like him at Halloween. I think it's the depth. Dick Cavett was a huge, huge fan of the brothers and Groucho himself, and there was a documentary not long ago, there's some PBS show about their relationship and affection, and I found it revelatory, as I'm sure your show is. I am on the phone from L.A. with Frank Ferrante, who is coming into town for, is this just a one-show thing on June 11th, Frank?
That's it. One night only at Teatro Zanzani, in the theater district.
And it's the it's the perfect place. If you've never been to Teatro Zanzani, you should make a point to go see this. My colleague Chris Jones, who has seen the show and raves about it, will be conducting an interview. And Chris is a very lively interviewer. And I will be continuing on with Frank Ferrante after a short commercial break. Stay tuned. We'll talk more about how this performance has changed as you, Frank, have changed. And in a sense, in a show like this, you make a bond to live with Groucho, in a sense, for 40 years. And I want to know how that has changed the shape and tone of the show. My guest, Frank Ferrante, is on the telephone from Los Angeles, who will be here to appear June 11th at Teatro Zanzani as Groucho Marx. You first started doing this, Frank, you were talking about his son, Arthur Marx, created a show for you that you won awards for across the country. Then the show changed, did it not?
Yeah, there were, Rick, there were two shows. There was the show that I had broken in at USC, and then the show that Arthur cast me for, in which I played Groucho Marx from age 15 to 85, which was a biographical piece with other performers.
Yeah.
And so here I was at 23 playing the, you know, the breadth of this man's existence. And so, but in the last 20 plus years, I've been doing this show that I'm doing in Chicago, An Evening with Groucho, which is ever evolving. It's not a traditional book show like Arthur's was, which was called Groucho Alive in Review.
When you also talked about this show, features much more improvisation, and I, you know, all you need to do is see Groucho Marx as the host of that game show to realize what a quick mind this man had. How is it you have done other things in the theater during all this time to direct it and done some other shows? Are you yourself, Frank, stunned? You're talking about you've been doing this for roughly two generations, meaning it has attracted, I don't know if the people who are the most ardent Groucho Marx fans who probably might have seen him in person, but also a new generation and maybe even another new generation as we speak. What is it about this guy?
It's a great question. I mean, it's been great joy. I mean, the show is currently running on public television. It took only 40 years to get it.
Yeah, right.
I got it there, Rick. But to answer your question, the reason I mention it is because the show, aside from the fact that I feel like I'm doing missionary work from, you know, by taking the show from town to town around the world, you know, I've played Australia two tours, I've played Canada, I've played 47 of the 50 states, Europe. But what the television show did for it is that, you know, a 12-year-old could be at 3 a.m. be in Paducah, Kentucky, and see it and go, "Oh my gosh, I want to go into the theater. I want to go into comedy. I want to go into clowning."
Yeah.
And that has been the beauty of what I do. You don't have to know who Groucho is, and you know, less and less people will know. I'm grateful that I get to be a proponent and continue to advocate for this particular kind of comedy, which has influenced all the crowd workers and all the comedians that we
no
love,
question.
Male, female.
No
and,
question.
And, you know, you said something, Andrew, you referenced Hal Holbrook, who became a friend of mine in the last 10 years of his life. He lived to be 95.
Right.
He did his show for 62 years, Mark Twain.
I know.
You're a fan like I am.
Mm-hmm.
And he said something to me, he said something really for me on my behalf when he did an interview for the LA Times. He goes, "You have to do what Frank and I do," he said, "you have to be passionate about the subject matter, and you have to be, and you need to desperately, you have to have a desperate need to share it with others." And there's a desperation and passion that's still part of why I do it. And also the idea, he's so funny. You say, "What is it?" I think he exhilarates.
Yeah.
My job, I was still Rick, is I had to go exhilarate the audience the way I was exhilarated when I was 9. And I bring a kid on stage, most performances at some point, and I make him up like Groucho, him or her up like Groucho, with some grease paint makeup, and they do the walk. And you can see them light up. And I'll hear from these kids 25 years later. I was in Kansas City doing the show at the Folly Theater where the Marx Brothers played. And there was this 6'2" man with a full beard. And he says to me, "I don't know if you remember me, but when I'm 7 years old, you pulled me on stage."
Oh,
and I realized
fun.
I've been doing the show for a long time.
How fun.
But it is exciting. And it, you know, in the last few years, I'm seeing the impact that the culmination of thousands. I've done 3,000 performances in 500 cities, and that adds up. But, you know, I don't think about it. And I never used to do it because of any kind of legacy purpose. I need to make a living. I love doing it. I've got kids. All that. That's why, you're attracted to it. I love the theater. And it's led to a lot of other work in the theater for me, as like you said, as a director.
Oh, sure. No question.
Plays,
no question.
But this has been the through line. You know, this is something that I'm happy and proud now to be.
Well, it certainly showcases you as an actor. Anybody playing someone from the ages of 15 to 85 shows a bit of range. But I also get the sense, Frank, and I'm sorry, I've never seen your shows, that there's something of almost a revival meeting sense to this kind of thing where you're, you know, the energy of Elmer Gantry or something, and because you are in many cases preaching to a crowd that is knowledgeable enough to get what you're doing.
Yeah, you know, it's so well put, Rick. I'll be in Philadelphia at the Walnut Street Theater, which is the oldest continuously running theater in the world, and it's 1,000 seats, and it feels like a rock concert. Mm. I was in Arlington Heights or the Metropolis, and it was sold out, and they know every line, they get it, and I think people, patrons, audience members are coming not just for the subject matter, but because the show has a long pedigree. And, I think that's part of it. And the show is different every night. So if you come three nights in a row, you're going to get a different show.
Well, I think for some people, it's curiosity, too. I mean, I think that Groucho Marx has faded enough into the American historical past that I think you could even do this. I'm just reading a long story about Babe Ruth as one of the most colorful human beings to ever trod this earth, about his non-baseball activities, and I thought, now there's an interesting character who could be a one-man show, not played by William Bendix. You know, it's very right. interesting, because my brother, younger brother Mark, after a long career as a rock and roll road manager, is now putting on shows across the world, these things called Legends in Concert, that features, they're not allowed to be called imitators or mimics, they're called tribute artists of Frank Sinatra, Marilyn Monroe, of Elvis Presley. And it packs houses, and I think there's something a little, does it take, as does Groucho perhaps, take people back to a time unburdened by the Bitcoin presidents and proclamations and bombs going off in other places? There's an innocence to it. Yes,
I agree, and I think there's an association that for a lot of my audiences, that's very positive, because a lot of patrons discovered Groucho when they were kids, and there's a lot of joy around it, and a sense of chaos and wildness and fun. And he was an anti-establishment figure. He was, he had this huge renaissance during the Vietnam era.
Oh God, yeah, sure.
And he was in his 80s. But you have a good point. I think there's also a lot to be said for the kind of humor, the wit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone blended better, Rick, physical and verbal humor.
Yeah.
And I'm still very physical, even at this stage. I jump off of stages and over couches. But the wordplay is fun, from the punning to the all of it is. It's so the
does it never does it. Even, does it ever on any given night be, I sense, and I talked to Chris about this too, it's a very physical show, that do you not get exhausted sometimes? Maybe that's why. Go ahead.
I've had a lot of at-bats, and I'm in good shape. And, I thrive on the adrenaline. And, once I get out, I start out as myself, and that's kind of a spoiler alert, as Frank, and I start talking to the crowd, and then I become Groucho, and then it's like I'm shot out of a cannon, and it's nonstop two acts of music and comedy and improv, and I don't get tired doing it. When I do long tours, if I'm doing 2 months in Australia, that's exhausting. Or 10 weeks in Calgary, you feel 8 shows, 9 shows a week.
Yeah.
That's exhausting.
Yeah,
but a one nighter is thrilling, and it's also high stakes. I have to go in. the day before.
Oh yeah.
Just do the technical rehearsal that morning, that afternoon, and you do it, and you're just hoping for the best, and you hope that the crew works well together, and the stage manager, and all of it. But it comes together really fast, Rick, and I love the thrill of that. I've never missed a show. I shouldn't say it out loud. In 40 years, and I've never been late for a show. And,
I come
from a time back when I was, when I first developed this as a, in my late teens. That was the genre was popular. You had Julie Harris doing Emily.
Sure,
you
sure.
You had James Whitmore doing
Truman,
Hell Harry,
yeah,
Truman and Teddy Roosevelt, and you had a slew. You had John Astin doing Edgar Allan Poe. This was a thing, and it was it becomes, you get an education and you're entertained. And
yeah,
I'll
tell you,
the case with
when
with
we
Groucho
come
too.
When we come back, we're going to be joined after the news by Groucho Marx's grandson, Andy Marx, who will join the conversation. And I'll tell both of you guys about a hit show that was in Chicago. It's a one-man show about Lenny Bruce, who I think Groucho Marx probably knew somewhere along the line. So listen to the news. Frank Ferrante, who will be here, I'll promote the hell out of the show in the next half hour. I've had a fabulous time talking to Frank Ferrante for the last half hour. He is coming to town on June 11th to perform his one-man show about Groucho Marx at Teatro Zinzani. You can get just go to Zinzani, Zinzani.com. They've got a lovely poster up there. You can get your tickets. We are also joined by Andy Marx is also on the phone. Andy, you're Groucho Marx's grandson, yes?
So far as I know, yes, I am.
Well, you have the same sense of humor. You must have known, I'm just trying to put together calendar-wise, you must have known your grandfather as a teenager. I think he died in 77. You must have been a teenager. Did you know him?
Yeah, thank you for making me younger than I actually am. Yes,
my pleasure. I try to do the same thing with myself. Yeah, go ahead.
I know. Don't we all? Yes, I was in my mid-20s when he passed away, and I had I spent a lot of time with him. Also, in the later years of his life, I was working on the You Bet Your Life reissue, so I was literally at his house every day for 2 or 3 years, basically eating lunch with him every day and watching reruns of You Bet Your Life and us discussing them. So yeah, I was very close with them, and there was just basically me and my brother, because Melinda, his daughter, didn't really have children until later, but I'm probably like one of the closest ones of all the relatives.
And when did you first see Frank channel your grandfather?
I believe it was Frank is always correcting. Frank is on the phone.
He certainly is.
I'm right here.
No secrets. There are no secrets between the three of us.
I'm in Palm Desert. I wish you were here with me, Frank, and we could have gone out to our favorite restaurant. Anyway, I believe it was in 1985, correct, Frank?
Yeah, that's right, 40 years ago.
85, my dad called me up, and he had this show called, he had written some kind of a Groucho Marx show. I don't know if it was a Life in Review or which one, but he had other people in it, like Gabe Kaplan and I think some others. And my father called me up and he said, hey, there's a student down at USC who does a Groucho show. I think he's pretty good. Why don't you go down there and tell me what you think about it? So I went down, and I thought he was absolutely mind blowing, and it was he was incredible.
It must really be something to see someone with whom you were very, very close once on stage in a way that gilds your memory. Yeah.
Yeah, what's really kind of cool, I mean, it's a little freaky, but it's also very cool, is that obviously, my remembrances of my grandfather was from his age.
Sure.
In his mid-60s to when he died in his mid-80s. So, Frank does this, like, cradle-to-grave show, from beginning to end, and when he goes into the old thing, I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, there are times when I want to just call Frank and say, hey, could you dress up as the old Groucho and can we have dinner together? And he is so spot on that it's, I'll say, hey, Frank, tell me, and it's some joke that my grandfather used to tell, and then Frank will do it, and it's like you're just sitting there with my grandfather.
Honestly.
I always say Frank is the... what Hal Holbrook was to Mark Twain, Frank is to Groucho.
It occurs to me, fellas, that it occurs to me, has anybody else attempted this to play?
As I say, Gabe Kaplan was in it for a while and not very good.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, Gabe Kaplan is a Jewish comedian.
Sure.
And when Groucho got older, he was kind of like a Jewish old man. So it's easier to do Groucho as an old man.
Yeah,
the walk is slow, and it's a completely you know, you're playing basically an old Jewish comedian with, you know, whatever the traits are of Groucho.
Right.
And so, like, the gay, you know, Gabe Kaplan could kind of do the old man okay, because, as I say, to me, that's an easier thing to do. When you're, you know, Frank's age, I don't, you know, Frank is still relatively, I mean, he's young.
Yes.
But when you see Frank doing, like, Groucho, you know, the dancing and everything that Groucho did, in like, in his 20s, and for a guy to be able to do that is sort of phenomenal. And it's hard, I would imagine.
You know, Frank, you must hear. Obviously do.
Well, first of all, I want to thank Andy. Thank you for all that. Andy and I are good friends.
Well, just me, tell me the money later, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. The check is in the mail. That? You know that.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Just send it over in crypto.
Well, that would just mean Donald Trump is making more money.
Do you have any of those Trump coins you could send me?
There you go.
Okay. Anyway, there you go. All right.
Frank, how often do you hear from people who knew, and this is as intimate as it gets, but how often do you hear before or after the shows from people who knew? In a way, not as an audience member, but knew Groucho Marx. You must have early on encountered some of those people, yes?
Honestly, I have, because I go back 40 years with it.
Sure.
I met Maury Riskind, and I knew, Garson Kanin of Rope Horn yesterday.
Oh, yeah,
people
sure.
People loved Groucho. And so they'd come to the shows. Carol Channing knew Groucho, they'd come. But really, it's very rare. And Andy and I go back 40 years, and he's one of the people that can actually speak to it now.
Yeah.
He might be one of the only ones that could say, you know, who could really speak with authority about his grandpa. And then Andy is a writer and photographer and a talent in his own right, and has been around, and he's been a great advocate of my work. He came out. I was in the desert about a year ago. And I don't think Andy had seen the show for decades, and he commented on the improv section, which makes me that's to me is the most fun in that show. But to get back to your question, it's very rare now. Used to more. You'd meet it's people that wrote for him, staff members of You Bet Your Life.
Oh, how interesting!
Mary and I were close.
You know, one of the reasons I'm thinking to myself that the improv. Now might be among the most interesting aspects of the entire show is that you're not quite channeling Groucho Marx, but you know him on a kind of level that is beyond some kind of intimate level. You have been this person on stage for such a long time that I'm thinking that much of the improv, if Groucho is listening from heaven, go, yeah, I would have said that. Yeah, I would have said that. Do you get that sense? I mean, you have to know him and feel him. Or am I making too much of this?
No, you're not. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that, because I'm always telling Frank this, that his crowd work is like some of the most amazing crowd work that I've ever seen any stand-up comic do, and I've seen a lot of them.
Oh,
and
sure.
Yes, okay, he's channeling Groucho and everything, and yeah, that's great, but he's also, he has his own built-in talent for doing that.
Yeah, I agree.
And it just sort of happens that it kind of intersects with the Groucho Marx character.
Yeah.
I mean, I could just watch Frank on stage, even if he wasn't doing the Groucho, if he was just doing crowd work.
Yep.
I mean, when I saw him a year ago, my daughter and I took my older daughter, we went, and we were like literally on the floor. Like, it was so great. I mean, he kind of steps out of the Groucho. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't even know what he's doing at that point, but it's so brilliant that it's phenomenal.
Yeah. It has to affect it has to affect you, Frank, in a, you know, undefinable, but I think fascinating kind of way. Well, we got to take a little break and come back, and we'll try to, again, ladies and gentlemen, June, only one show, June 11th at Teatro Zinzani, which is an amazing place. You've been there before, yes, Frank?
Well, I've worked, there for, I opened the space six
That's
years
right.
ago.
That's right.
Doing Teatro Zinzani as
Caesar character, which is an improv-based character. So I've had a lot of at-bats.
Yeah. Well, it's an amazing place, and you get to eat there, too. Eat and drink. We'll be back in a couple minutes with Frank Ferrante and Andy Marks. Andy, I want to ask you about... I've learned somewhere in my modest bit of research, don't take much research to interview Frank, that you were the unit publicist for a movie called Manhunter. Is that right?
I was the unit publicist on two movies that filmed in Chicago. One of those was Manhunter, starring the great Chicago native
Billy Peterson. Billy Peterson.
But I was also I worked for like 2 or 3 months on the very first movie that Steven Seagal ever made called Above the Law. Spent time in Chicago, and I speaking of Chicago, I don't know if you know, but my other grandfather was Gus Kahn. Was the songwriter who was from Chicago. So
well, and the Marx Brothers
family is from Chicago.
Well, the Marx Brothers spent, and you must know about something about this too, Frank. I don't think they performed a lot, but they spent a considerable number of years in Chicago before going off to going back to New York.
Oh, yeah.
We'll talk about that and both of you guys. Thank you so much for coming on the air. Andy Marks and Frank Ferrante are best of friends. They both live in sunny California. Frank will be here on June 11th at Teatro Zinzani to play Frank's, to be Andy's grandfather, Groucho Marx. It sounds like the two acts. It's Frank's been doing this for 40 years. And it really does sound like an incredibly special evening. It'll be embellished by my colleague and friend, Chris Jones, a theater critic of the Chicago Tribune, who will be interviewing you after the show. Frank, talk to me about the Chicago connection, if you could, for a couple minutes. The brothers lived here. The brothers lived and performed here.
They lived in Chicago for 12 years, from their early 20s until their early 30s. Around 1910, they were there. And so they were based in Chicago during those early vaudeville years when they were developing their characters, their acts. And they constantly toured and worked in Chicago from the 19-teens, 11 till the 40s. And they would break in, they would tour their Broadway shows like Animal Crackers, Coconuts, Alsatias. Those played in at the Palace Theater, the Cadillac Palace, Chicago Theater, and the CIBC Theater, which was the Majestic. And they would break in scenes from their movies and at these theaters as well. They did scenes from A Day at the Races, scenes from Go West. Chicago was an important town for the Marx Brothers, and they loved Chicago. And as Andy was saying, Andy hit the grandfather jackpot in that his other grandfather was Gus Kahn from Chicago, who wrote It Had to Be You and Dream a Little Dream. I mean, standards, in the way that Berlin and Porter, right up there with them.
Great American Songbook,
Yeah, so the Marxists played, even like the theater where I'm playing is butted up against the Niederlander, which used to be the Oriental.
Chico
played there 3 times. In the 40s with his band, Chico Marx and his orchestra.
How have you found Chicago audiences in general? I know it's a strange thing to just base it on your previous experiences here, but how have you found the audiences here?
I love it. I feel like an adopted son in Chicago. I've worked over 30 years in Chicago. I played maybe 40 suburbs in Chicago and in downtown itself. And I did a show called Teatro Zinzani for years there, which is also influenced by that vaudeville variety kind of and burlesque kind of humor, which is, again, I played this character, the Caesar, this wild Latin lover character, look at you. And it's very interactive. And I bring, audience members on stage, and it's really the at bat. You say, how do you get good at it? How's the improv come about?
Yeah.
Well, if you do hundreds and thousands of performances as Groucho or as these other characters, and I direct plays, so you have to be really facile.
Sure.
After a while, you hope that you get good at it, or you should get out. But I've been lucky to have this consistent career.
Well,
it
really sounds like you deserve this career. Andy, have you ever seen Frank in any show other than the Groucho Show?
I have not, and that's one of my big regrets in life. But
it's not too late.
I get to do that.
It's never too late.
Well, of course not. No, I will. It's something I definitely will do, and I will get around to doing it.
Andy, the legacy of the brothers, is it ever felt to you like some kind of burden?
No. Here's what I always tell people. If my grandfathers had been Stalin and Mussolini, that probably would have been a burden. But why would it be a burden? You know, I've gotten to hang out with some of the greatest people you could imagine. I've done my own thing. I've actually had careers that nobody else in my family ever did, and I kind of went my own way, and loosely based. You know, I mean, it's entertainment and it's performing and it's whatever, but I just never really go into that. Oh, it feels like a burden.
Yeah, good.
It's kind of boring. It's kind of boring. Like, really, that's a burden.
Well, you got to say is, look, you got to just go see Frank Ferrante wherever he's playing next and you'll get it. Yeah, I'm not
going to say it. And Andy has a one-man show that in which he celebrates his Grandpa Groucho and his Groucho Gus Kahn. When she plays ukulele, it's fantastic. So he's perpetuating these legacy legends.
What's that?
It's kind of a tribute show to Gus Kahn, and it's called It Had to Be Gus. But when I wrote the show, everybody said, well, you know, you probably should also mention Groucho. So it became It Had to Be Gus and Groucho, too. And next time I'm in Chicago, if ever I end up in Chicago performing it, we can discuss that, because it's a great show. People, you know, the guy's written some of the greatest songs.
No question. Yeah, no question.
You know, I always say, you know, if you had just written It Had to Be You and Dream a Little Dream of Me and retired,
you'd be fine.
That'd be a good career, you know. But he wrote a song called I'll See You in My Dreams, which was George Harrison's favorite song. And it was the song when they did the big tribute concert for George Harrison.
One of the most beautiful moments on video I have ever seen. Played on a ukulele by
Joe Brown. Joe Brown, right?
Yeah, Joe Brown, yep.
Imagine that my grandfather wrote a song that was one of the Beatles' favorite songs of all time.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of amazing. You know?
Well, and also it literally is one of the most moving 3 or 4 minutes I've ever seen anywhere. Frank, you must have, you must have seen the movies, the famous Marx Brothers movies, and maybe the TV show a million times. Do you, like a singer doing vocalese, do you refresh your do you watch any of that stuff in a sense to refresh your memory, or do you watch that stuff out of just pure joy?
Well, both. I mean, he still makes me laugh more than anyone else. He still exhilarates me. And when I'm about to do a run, I will reference it, because my interpretation has become, you know, in some ways more me, like during the crowd work.
Sure.
And it's got its own flavor. And so I try to get back to the basics, to remember, get the accent right, the attitude. You know, he's very economical, and sometimes he's flailing. I mean, he's full of, he's at once, brash and at once coy, and he's got it all. So I do reference it.
Finish, Frank. I'm sorry.
No, that's really it. It's a complicated persona.
Well, one of the things that I just wanted to add this is that, talking about, again, like doing, I think it was John Gielgud or somebody who said, that like playing Hamlet at 20 is not as good as playing it when you're 50, you need the mileage, before you can really do that justice. And, Even though, Frank was, 20-something when I saw him the first time doing the old man Groucho, it was great. But, now, obviously we're all getting older, Frank is always a youthful guy. But,
it becomes a little more deeper and resonates even more. You know?
Richer and more more levels to it. Gentlemen, I cannot thank you enough for coming on the air to talk about this.
Well, you are so welcome.
It fascinates me.
Rick, thank you. And you've been, at WGN has been such great advocates of the arts.
Yeah.
We really appreciate you. Well, and
we try to, I don't speak for the station, but we try to do our best. Frank Ferrante will be here June 11th at Teatro Zinzani in the heart of the Loop. 40th year playing Groucho Marx, and go for the improv. Go for the improv. Zinzani.com. Zinzani.com. Andy Marx, I know you must love it in California. You ever come to Chicago, I'll get Bill Peterson, and we'll go out for drinks. Billy, who's...
I would love that. I haven't seen Bill since those days. Yeah.
He's done just fine. You know, you spent 10 years as... You spent 10 years as a star and one of the producers of CSI. You don't even have to get out of bed to make a living.
No, I know. He was such a nice guy on Manhunter.
Billy's great.
Did you know the man who directed the Steven Seagal movie? Because he's kind of a famous Chicago guy, Andy Davis.
Sure. I had dinner with Andy 2 weeks. Andy's a Southsider.
Kidding.
No, I had dinner with him 2 weeks ago. He redid his first film called something. It's a Southside movie starring his brother, who did not have much of a career in the movies, about a rock band.
He's a musician.
Yep, a rock band. I know Andy pretty well. Gentlemen, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you
both.
Thank you.
And knock him dead.
Thank you so much.